You are Locked On Jets, your daily podcast on the New York Jets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
It is a Wednesday episode of the Locked On Jets podcast here on the Locked On Podcast Network, where we know that for real fans, there is no off season. It is March 6th, 2019, and I'm your host, John B. from GangreneNation.com. Thank you so much for joining us today as we look at the Jets and the NFL. Yesterday was a fairly significant day on the NFL calendar. It was the deadline for teams to offer players the franchise tag, or put the franchise tag on players. It's not really, players don't really have a say in the matter. It's one of the most amazing things. I still cannot get over, you know, decades later, the fact that the players' union allowed this mechanism to come into being, where teams are allowed to prevent the top players from hitting the open market. It boggles the mind how poorly the players' association negotiated the fact that this is allowed. I still can't get over it. There were six teams that used the franchise tag. Jets did not use it, and that's no surprise because the Jets don't really have any free agents worth big money this year. There was really nobody who was even a consideration, I would believe. It would not have been an issue of money. And I think the amount of cap space also probably played into the fact that the Jets did not use the franchise tag, because anybody the Jets wanted to keep, they could probably afford to figure out a long-term deal on. So no surprise there. The Jets do not use the franchise tag, but there were some franchise tags which impacted the Jets, because Jets are going to be one of the biggest spenders in free agency this year, presumably. They at least are among the league leaders in cap space, or they will be once the new league year begins. And it was a very edge rusher heavy franchise tag list this year. You have Dee Ford from the Chiefs, Jadeveon Clowney from the Texans, DeMarcus Lawrence from the Cowboys, Frank Clark from the Seahawks. So four of the six franchise tags were used on edge guys. Also, Grady Jarrett from the Falcons, who's interior kind of guy. And then the 49ers give the franchise tag to the kicker, which can we all just take a second to laugh at the 49ers for doing something? That is the most, that's making a move for the sake of making a move when you franchise the kicker. It's just a silly move. The Jets may have had the best kicker in the league this year, and they didn't franchise the kicker. Why would you franchise the kicker? That's a silly move. But anyway, Jets are obviously looking for help on the edge. You expected a lot of these edge guys to go off the board, either re-signing with their team before the free agency period opens, or their team putting the franchise tag on them. That, again, was to be expected because edge rushers are quite a commodity. But there are still some good edge rushers who are going to hit free agency. You know, I think back to a year ago, and I remember, and you can play it back, I mean, I said it on the show. Last year, the Jets had all this cap space, and I did not see many players I wanted to use the cap space on. This year, I see some guys that are worth taking a look at. You look at Flowers in New England. I'll tell you a guy who's now going to be available, Justin Houston, a veteran guy on the wrong side of 30, but still a very productive player. I think he'd be a really good fit for the Jets. I think he'd be a good get. They could get him. To a lesser extent, maybe Ziggy Ansah. I'd have to look at the contract, though. That's a deal where I'd want, yeah, I would not want to pay him big bucks. I would not want to pay him big guarantees. If you can get him at a reasonable rate and he's, you know, worth a gamble, then maybe I could see it. So, you know, at the edge, there's still some guys available. It's not as good as it looked on paper a few weeks ago, but still some quality players who will be there for the Jets. And today I'm going to talk about the offseason, but I'm going to talk about it in broad terms. I'm going to explain to you some of the ways I view the offseason and some of the things that I hear frequently that I disagree with. We're going to talk of a few things about the draft, and I'm going to talk a little bit about free agency. Just common things people say that I really don't agree with, and hopefully you'll take what I say to heart. At least it'll make you think a little bit. As we head into this important part of the year where the Jets will start to build their 2019 roster and hopefully, you know, put a better team on the field than they've been putting on the last few years. And I'm going to start talking about the draft a little bit. And these are just some things I do when I watch the draft. I learned this because I used to make these mistakes. And the first thing I'm going to tell you is that when you look at mock drafts as we enter this period of time, this period in the lead up to the draft, there's always a tendency when you see some mock draft that is a little bit of an outlier, where you see like some guy going super high that's much higher in a mock draft than every other mock draft you see, or a guy who falls much lower than you're expecting. there's a tendency to dismiss it as stupid. And I think that there's too much groupthink among NFL fans and the draft community when it comes to stuff like this, because it seems to me like every single year, the guy who will never fall, there's always one guy you see, you say he'll never fall, and the guy ends up falling. And I mean, I could take you through the years of guys who fell further than anybody expected them to. You know, one of the most famous examples, of course, was Aaron Rodgers. If you go back to 2005, where Rodgers, you know, was a guy who was a contender to be the number one overall pick that year, and you know, fell into the 20s. And I mean, it worked out okay for him. In case you haven't noticed, certainly it worked out just fine for Aaron Rodgers. But I mean, there are the famous shots of the, you know, the room in the draft facility where guy's sitting there, he's stuck in the room with his family members. It's just a painful experience. So you can never be certain the way the draft board's going to fall. And one of the things that I must emphasize is that every team's board is different. And sometimes teams' boards are radically different from the consensus of the prognosticators. There are some guys who, you know, prognosticators think will be high draft picks. The mockers think will go high, and they're not rated nearly as highly on the team's boards. Or sometimes, you know, things just fall a certain way where a team may have taken a player at number five, but they're the only team that would take the player that high, and a better opportunity comes to them, so they pass on the player, and then the player goes into free fall. So don't get out of the mindset that it's impossible for a player to fall, is that a mock draft is stupid because it's an outlier, because it's different. That's not necessarily the case. And I'll take that also to draft day. And this happens every year, where there's a player who's drafted much higher than people are expecting him to be drafted. Or a player falls much further than people expect him to be drafted. And sometimes if the player is drafted much higher than he's expected to be picked, everybody calls it a reach. Everybody says it's a bad pick. And I can take you through the years of instances where that was the case. I remember 2008, people said that about Chris Johnson when the Titans took him. People said, well, what position is he going to play? Is he what, running back or a wide receiver? Well, you know what? He ended up being a pretty good running back. He had a 2,000-yard season with the Titans. So that ended up not being such a bad pick, even though there were people who questioned it. People said, well, that's a reach. And I mean, I could take you through recent Jets history where I remember back in 2011, there were a few people on my website who were angry that the Jets drafted Muhammad Wilkerson over Daquan Bowers, because there was a point in time where like there was a mock draft or two that had Daquan Bowers going very high, like top five. The Jets were picking late in the first round that year. They picked Muhammad Wilkerson. Now, for all the issues Muhammad Wilkerson had later on in his Jets career, I think you'd have to say that that was a pretty successful pick. You know, he got through his rookie contract and played mostly at a very high level. Now, we all know how it ended, and that left a lot of bad feelings. But, you know, you can't go overboard when you look at these pre-draft projections. I'm not saying the mocks are totally useless. I think that's another lesser mistake people make, especially when you're talking about the guys who are really keyed in with NFL clubs. Yeah, I've heard general managers say that, you know, especially the top draft prognosticators, they'll look at the mocks just because those guys are talking to other teams, they're talking to scouts, they're talking to GMs, and it gives them a broad idea of where a player is going to go. No, you know, they may not get which player goes to the Jets right with the third overall pick, but they have a general idea of who's going when, and it gives you a chance to kind of view how most of the league views the board. But there's always going to be outliers. So I think that's another important thing to watch when it comes to the draft. Now, another thing I'm going to tell you about watching the draft is I would advise you not to go totally overboard when it comes to positional value. Now, there are going to be some exceptions. There are extremes that are obviously important here. If your team drafts a punter in the third round, they've made a stupid decision. If your team's drafting a fullback in the second round, that's a stupid decision. But I think that there is a tendency to maybe overrate the position of the player you're drafting. At the end of the day, if your team drafts a good player, you're going to be pretty happy with the pick, almost regardless of the position, except of an extreme like that, where your team's making just such a ridiculous position play that it's not going to matter. And I used an example on the show the other day. I remember when the Jets drafted Marcus May back in 2017. A lot of the response was, well, I don't care if he's a good player. That's a bad pick because he's a safety. Well, now think about all the recent Jets picks that they've had on day two, rounds two, round three. Marcus May is among the best picks they've ever made. If you want to complain about a pick, let's go the year before with Christian Hackenberg, who played a much more important position. It's not all about the position. Now, I don't want to take this too far because positional value does matter. There are certain positions are not equal in the NFL. And getting a good player at one position may be more valuable than getting a good player at another position. But just don't take it to such an extreme because at the end of the day, nobody remembers the position. Nobody remembers what your positional needs were on draft day 10 years down the line. Do you remember what the Jets' positional needs were 2009, 2010? You probably don't. What you remember are the quality of players they drafted. If you get a 10-year player at the draft, you're not going to care about what position he played or what your needs were at the time. The draft is always a long-term proposition. So don't overreact to positional value, to the position a player plays when your team picks him. And then one last thing, this is something that's kind of driven me nuts through the years, is whenever a team trades up, and I always hear the same analysis, they got their guy. I hear it every single time. You go get your guy. When you see your guy, you go get him. And that just, you don't really need to go into much detail to understand why that's such flawed thinking. Are there instances, specific instances, where trading up makes sense for a team? Yes. But your standard operating procedure should generally not be looking to trade up all the time. And the numbers back this up. The numbers back up. The teams that draft best are the teams that have the most picks, the teams that trade down more than they trade up. That's what the numbers say. But beyond that, just think of how ridiculous of an idea this is, that the second you like a player, you give up anything for him. No matter how much you have to give up, you go get your guy. Doesn't matter if you have to mortgage the future, you go get. And football's not really a sport where, aside from maybe the quarterback position, and that's, I think, one of the few instances where a trade, I think that's one of the instances where a trade-up makes sense, where you love a quarterback, you go get him. But can you imagine, you'd run your team like Mike Tannenbaum ran the Jets, where you just have a few blue-chip players, and then you have no quality anywhere else. So, that's just a ridiculous, I hear that expression, you go get your guy when you like him. I hear it every time, and I hear it every time a team makes a trade, and it's just so, to me, it just seems kind of ridiculous. There are instances, again, there are moments where a trade-up is good for a team, sure, but that does, you know, the standard operating procedure should not just be, we should always trade up no matter what. You go get your guy no matter what. I always hear, you know what I love is when like your team trades a future third for a fourth, and It's a negative value proposition. You've given up a third round pick next year for a fourth round pick this year, so it's negative value. A third round pick's usually better than a fourth round pick. That's pretty obvious. And you'll hear a fan say, "Well, we got our guy." Well, guess what? Next year, the other team's going to get their guy with your third round pick, and their guy will probably be better than your guy because they're picking their guy with a third round pick, and you're picking your guy with a fourth round pick. So it's just an argument that does not speak to me. It really does not. I think it's. Never say that to me. Go get your guy. If we ever meet in public or something like that, you know, we ever grab dinner or something, we ever grab coffee, and we're talking about the draft, don't tell me, oh, you go get your guy. You're essentially saying that no matter the price, if you like a player, go get him. And the draft is an inexact science, to say the least, because you're trying to project the future careers of guys who are 20, 21, 22. That's tough to do in any capacity, but much less the NFL, a sport as physical where, you know, even if everything else goes right, injuries can derail a career. You need to leave yourself some margin for error. So, you know, I think teams, and I think this is true of teams in general, I think teams need to show more humility in the draft process and understand that even the best guys, even the legendary figures in this league have made mistakes in the past. Now I'm going to talk a little bit about free agency, and these are just some good operating procedures to keep in mind when you hear about free agent deals your team signs or some other team signs. The first thing you must keep in mind is the structure of a contract is much more important than the pure numbers, because depending on the way the deal is structured, it could be radically different. The contract could be radically different. Let me give you an example. If you heard that the Jets signed a player to a two-year, $100 million contract, you might think, man, that's crazy. I mean, there's nobody who's worth $50 million a year in this league at this point, at least the way the league is structured financially, the way the salary cap is set up. That might be the case, but it also could be a situation. This is an extreme example. It would never actually work this way, but I'm just giving you this example to kind of offer some context. The deal could be structured where the first year is $1 million guaranteed. And year two is $99 million, none of it guaranteed, no dead money if you cut the player. So essentially what it is, because of the way the deal is structured, the player is automatically going to get cut the next year, or the deal is going to be restructured. Essentially, it's a one-year, $1 million contract with an option year. Essentially, an option year, you know, you kept that in place to give yourself exclusive, you know, to give yourself the option to restructure the deal or something like that. So structure matters, and that's a mistake that always happens. Is a deal can be very team friendly in its structure, where it allows you to get out after 1 year, or it can be a very poor deal where you're essentially committing to this player for a number of years. And that's not, you know, I shouldn't even say that, because even a bad structured deal could turn into a good deal for a team if the player produces. You know, if you get a good player, it doesn't really matter the structure, because you're not going to look to cut him anyway. So. But I think when you're talking about money, the structure does matter. You know, how much money is paid in the first couple of years? Is there a lot of unguaranteed money at the back of the contract kind of inflating the deal? How much is guaranteed? How much signing bonus? Those are things that really matter. So, you know, whenever you see the first dollar figures on a deal, you immediately get an idea whether it's a good or a bad deal. But really, you need to see the specifics. You need to see the breakdown year by year by year. How much of the deal is the player likely to see? Because if we're talking about, you know, big money year four, year five, odds are the deal's either going to be extended and changed by that point, or the player's going to be cut, and it's not really going to impact your deal. So you're looking at more upfront cost. You're looking at more things like that. And, I mean, most of these deals are, you know, really only keep the player. It's very rare you see a free agency deal where the team is committing to a player truly for more than 2 years. Usually most deals allow the team to get out after 1 year or 2 years. That leads me to my next point, is there's a difference between a good structure and a good contract. And this is a Jets issue that I see a lot when people talk about some of Maccagnan's free agent deals, but it's an issue I see across the league. I think a lot of fans do this across the league, where they look at the structure, which is good, but then they conclude, oh, wow, this is a great deal for the team because you can get out of it after 1 or 2 years. Well, that's practically every contract. I mean, it's very rare, except aside from like your big, big money deals or quarterback contracts, most teams can get out of their deals very quickly. So it's not really an advantage. And just because it's a good structure, that doesn't make it as a good contract. It doesn't mean your general manager deserves to have praise heaped upon him. Yeah, you can give him some credit because it's better to have a well-structured deal than a poorly structured deal. But at the end of the day, if you have to cut a guy after 1 year, a good structure that allows you to get out of it doesn't make it a good contract. You know what's a good contract? Good contract's when you sign a player and you want to keep him around because you like the dollar amount he's getting. The dollar amount is a bargain relative, or it's fair value relative to what he produces. That's a good contract. A contract that you have to cut a guy after 1 or 2 years, that's not a good contract. And just it being structured well doesn't necessarily mean that it's a good deal. That doesn't mean that your general manager deserves credit. Your general manager deserves criticism because he signed a deal for a player that you want to cut immediately after you sign him. If a guy's good, you don't want to cut him, and you don't really care as much about the structure. And the other thing, one other thing I'd add is the ability to get out of a deal is different from a deal having no impact on your financial situation. If a guy is a bust as a free agent, well, that's money you've wasted. That's money that could have gone to signing a better player who could have helped you over the long run. You know, if you have to cut a guy after 1 year, well, last offseason, you could have signed a guy who instead could have been with your team 3 or 4 years. And in addition to that, just being able to get out of a deal does not mean that your team pays nothing going forward, because a lot of these deals have dead money. You know, you'll hear that cutting this player will bring you $6 million in savings. Well, if a player has a $12 million cap hit, $6 million in savings means that you save $6 million, but you also have $6 million in dead money that could have gone to something else. So that's another important thing to understand. Just a couple other points I'd like to make is, and this is not exactly the thing anybody wants to hear with the Jets, but teams are frequently declared the winners of free agency in March and end up regretting a lot of the contracts by December. The teams that win free agency are the teams that find bargain deals. And by bargain deals, I don't necessarily mean small money deals. I mean deals where the player produces more in value than what they are being paid. And it's tough to win free agency when you're giving out big money deals, because free agency is a very inefficient method by which to build your team. Now, in the Jets' case, they don't have a choice because the Jets don't really have many players and they have a lot of cap space. So the Jets have to try and build their team this way. But the teams that win free agency typically are not the teams that make the splashiest signings. You don't realize that they've won free agency until you get deeper into the season and you realize how many quality players they've signed who are really producing for them at a very low price. So that's something to keep winning free agency in March does not mean you are ultimately the winner of free agency. And then one final point I'm going to make, and this is kind of contrary to one I made last year was the exception, I think, that proves the rule, just because last year's free agent class was so bad. But something you always hear this time of year is, well, why don't we just save our money till next year? Next year's free agency class is so much better than this year's. And I said that last year because last year's class was so bad. But you hear this every year. Well, I'll just take you back to the point I made at the top of the show. The free agency class always looks better in advance than it does when it actually hits, because you have guys like Dee Ford. You have guys like Mr. Lawrence in Dallas. You have guys like Clowney. You have guys like Jarrett, who are originally looked at. You look a year ago, you were looking and you said, wow, those guys are going to be free agents. Well, by the time free agency comes, their team has franchised them. And then there are also other stars who don't sign an extension with their team until their team has to make the move, until the team is in the last year of the contract and there's some urgency to get an extension done with the player so they don't lose the player, so the player doesn't hit the market. So, you know, I think that's another easy trap to fall into. So I would advise you to avoid it. Anyway, thank you for listening today. I wanted to take you through my vision of the offseason. This is how I view the offseason after, you know, years of watching the NFL. And I wanted to take you through some of the things you'll hear a lot in the offseason that you'll disagree with. Most importantly is the "you go get your guy no matter what" during the draft. Don't ever say that to me. Anyway, that's all for our show today. Thank you for listening. This has been the Locked On Jets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. As always, if you enjoy the show, subscribe, iTunes or Spotify. Leave the show a good review in iTunes if you do enjoy it. Hope you have a great Wednesday, everybody, and we will be back again on Thursday. Talk some more Jets, talk some more NFL.